This is Hillbilly Solid with Silas House.
Mr. Mount.
Howdy, and welcome to another hour of Hillbilly Solid. I'm Silas House, and you're listening to listener-supported radio here on WUKY 91.3. You just heard The Man Who Wants You by Amos Lee from his new release, Mountains of Sorrow, Rivers of Song. It is a fine, fine album. I can't recommend it highly enough. We're sure glad that you've joined us. We have a full slate of good music for you today, and later on we'll be talking to best-selling and acclaimed author Denise Shardina about the awful chemical spill in West Virginia, an upcoming visit to Lexington, what she's working on recently, and lots of other things. But right now, let's get into the music. Here's Basha Bulat.
Thank you.
I tried, but it's hard sometimes. The roots don't take it. Takes a while and you pull at the strings, but they're broken it seems. The dance isn't over for me. No, my love. I know I was wrong, but you know that you'll always be my love. Stay for a while our leaves are still green. Please.
Dali, he's the sound of drums up, she jumps and she hollers, here I come. When Dali, he's the sound of drums up, she jumps and she hollers, here I come. And she's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring. Ha! Woo! Stop her when she hears the call, Dolly Dawn gonna have herself a ball. Don't stop her when she hears the call, Dolly Dawn gonna have herself a ball. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. Dali starts to shake and shout, clear the floor, cause she really moves about. When Dali starts to shake and shout, clear the floor, cause she really moves about. And she's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna call the rafters to ring. Yeah. Begin to burn. Soon Dali goes into a fall, turn and spin and begin to climb the walls. Soon Dali goes into a fall, turn and spin and begin to climb the walls. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring. She's gonna dance, she's gonna sing, she's gonna cause the rafters to ring.
Thank you. plenty for going. This I know, this I know. For the weeds have been steadily growing. Please don't go, please don't go. Are you going away with no word of farewell? Will there be not a trace left behind? Well, I could have loved you better. I didn't mean to be unkind. You know that was the last thing on my mind. Rest dies a burning without you, without you. Are you going away with no word of farewell? Will there be not a trace left behind? Well, I could have loved you better. I didn't mean to be unkind. You know that was the last thing on my mind. And that was the last thing on my
That was The Last Thing on My Mind from the Inside Llewyn Davis soundtrack, with Stark Sands doing lead vocals on that folk classic and doing a really nice job of it. Before that was Ben Solee covering a wonderful Harry Belafonte tune, Dolly Dawn, and that's on Ben's brand new album, The Hollow Sessions, which is a requirement for any good music collection, as all albums by Ben Solee are. And we started off that session with a lovely little song from Basha Bulat, Little Waltz. I'm really excited about a new band out of Northern Alabama who are just flat out fun and rousing with some great arrangements and vocals. Here's St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
You got your limit, baby. Raven is the color of her long curly hair. Red is the dress she knows how to wear. Bluest eyes I've ever seen, maybe just a touch of green. Oh, she could steal most any woman's man. This'd be a real good time to hold my hand. She walked up and said, "Hello, it's been a while. Don't think I didn't notice the nervous in your smile. Wasn't that long ago? You were a whole lot more than friends. So this would be a real good time to hold my hand. Don't let this moment linger. Now would be the time out with your fingers, get them tangled up with mine. Let her know for sure that I'm more than just a soft place to land. This would be a real good time to hold my hand. I'm your future, and she's your past. If it's over with her, and our love's gonna last, don't let this moment linger. Now would be the time to reach out. More than just a soft place to land. This would be a real good time. Oh, this would be a real good time. This would be a real good time to hold my hand.
Skin with color dyes. Oh, I thought
we were past the time when injustice was the leader and liberty the light. Oh, it's so heavy.
That set you heard the Tedeschi Trucks Band doing It's So Heavy from their new album Made Up Mind. Before that was Brandi Clark proving that real country music is still alive and well, even if most radio stations never play it, all those other radio stations. That was her song Hold My Hand from her real country record 12 Stories. And we began that set with St. Paul and the Broken Bones with Call Me. Their album, Half the City, will drop soon, and it's a really, really good one. This is Hillbilly Solid, and I'm your host, Silas House, here on listener-supported WUKY. Stay tuned, because we'll be talking to author and activist Denise Giardina here in a few minutes, and we'll have lots more good music.
If you'd like to keep up with WUKY, we're easy to find. We're all over social media. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/WUKY. You can like us on Facebook and join the conversation there. Or you can visit us the old-fashioned way, online at WUKY.org. You'll find a gallery of photos, videos, and links to news and information. Financial support by listeners like you make it possible to keep you informed and entertained on the air, online, and through social media. Thanks so much from WUKY.
Speaking of really, really good ones, here's a mournful old tune that I just so happened to write.
Thank you. sky is gray and so low. This day has gone on and on, and it's cold, Lord, cold as night. I feel it's lasted 2 or 3 lives. I am lonesome and so blue. My baby's gone somewhere new. If I can't have the one I love, I'm nothing but a mourning dove. I walk this gray mountain in the icy rain. I hear the lonely old squalling of a train. Alone in this holler with family all around. No matter how many, my baby can't be found. Redbirds have mates, and I have none. I long for spring, so winter's done. 2 foxes track through falling snow. But where my love's gone, I'll never know. Red buds bloom again, I'll stand in the sun. Let my grief be soon till my blues are gone. Every little dogwood, every little thing, help me accept that I'll never get that ring. For I'm tired of this sad pining. I'm weary of forever crying. No matter what, I'll always recall the one I love first and last of all. Sky is gray and so long. This day has gone on and on.
And I awoke from my dream, waking by the darkness of the night. I was unprepared to be unseen. I was prepared to fight. Oh, the rains are bitter, the winds are strong. Sorrow in the rivers of song, and I was unprepared in my animal state to contemplate the cruel winds of fate. Sorrow in the rivers of song, and ocean passes. Later in the day we'll raise our glasses to a good man now belongs to the mountains of sorrow and the river's song.
That was another one from Amos Lee, and before that we had Sam Gleaves doing This Sad Pine, and Sam is a student up at Berea College, and he's appeared on our show before. You can find out more about him at Sam Gleaves, and that's GLEAVES.com. Sam, like many people, is a great fan of our guest today, author and activist Denise Yardina. Most folks know Denise as the author of the classic novels Storming Heaven and The Unquiet Earth, as well as her beautiful novel about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Saints and Villains, and other books. She became very well known in the year 2000 when she ran for governor of West Virginia on an anti-MTR platform. Denise grew up in the Black Wolf mining camp in rural McDowell County, West Virginia, and was profoundly impacted by that experience. She holds several degrees and has been active in the Episcopal Church for many years. She is also a public intellectual whose commentary has informed a generation and helped to shape the current tide of protest against corporate invasion of Appalachia. Denise, we're so happy to have you on the show with us today.
Thanks. Glad to talk to you.
Now, you'll be coming to Lexington to appear at the Church of the Good Shepherd on the evening of February 13th, and I encourage everyone out there to attend your reading. What will you be doing that night at the church?
Well, as far as I know, and I haven't talked to those folks for a couple of weeks, but I think I'll probably be doing a reading from Storming Heaven, I believe. They have a book group that has read that book, and so it'll sort of be like a book group, except the author will be there. And after the reading, I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions and answers and discussion, things like that.
Do you enjoy being on the road like that? Or
I do. I actually, one of the things I enjoy most is the question and answers, because it's kind of fun to hear what people are thinking. And sometimes people ask a question that you don't expect, and sometimes they'll have noticed something that I don't even notice myself, even though I wrote a book. And it's always kind of interesting to, one of the things, as you know, as an author, is that you sort of imagine people out there reading your book, but you write it, and then it goes out in the world, and you can't sit on people's shoulders, and watch them read and go into their head and see what they're thinking as they're reading your book. So going out and talking like that is actually a chance to do that, to see how it impacts people and what they think of it and so forth.
Well, Storming Heaven came out in the late 80s, and to what do you think this book owes its longevity? People just continue to read, especially Storming Heaven and The Unquiet Earth, and I know so many students who tell me that they've been just profoundly changed by these books. What is it about these books that keep people reading them?
Well, I suppose in a way they're the heart of what I wrote, in the sense that even though they weren't my first two novels, I wrote one called Good King Harry, which is about Henry V, of all things, King Henry V. But these are the books that I wanted to write all along, actually. I wanted to write them first, and the reason I didn't write them first was because I decided as a first-time author I figured I'd make mistakes, and so I didn't. And also, I wanted to make the mistakes on a book that didn't matter so much to me, I guess. I guess that's a way of saying that this subject matter really mattered to me. They're definitely the two most personal books to me. I've written about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Emily Bronte and people like that, but it's not the same as writing about where you're from. And so maybe that comes through. I don't know. It's certainly Storming Heaven. The fact that students are still reading it and that teachers are still assigning it and so forth has certainly helped its longevity, if you call it that. But I think they wouldn't keep doing it if it didn't mean something to them. So I guess it's just that there's so much of me personally in it, perhaps more than even in my other books.
Speaking of teaching, you're fixing to be finished with that, right? You're going to be able to write full-time pretty soon.
Well, that's the plan. So far, it hasn't worked out, but I've only been retired for a little over a month.
Right.
And I took a couple of weeks off just to read and relax up until Christmas, and then the plan, then I had to do a lecture at Davis and Elkins College, on mountaintop removal, that took about a week and a half to work on. So I worked on that, and then the plan was to start writing. But the day that I gave the lecture was the day that air water went all to pieces here, and frankly, I just haven't been able to concentrate. So this is my first month of retirement. It has not worked out in terms of being a full-time writer. I'm hoping that can change here pretty soon. It hasn't quite sunk in that I'm retired, but I am, and I'm hoping that, my book production, before I was teaching, I wrote Good King Harry and Storming Heaven and the Unquiet Earth over a period of 10 years. And then in the 21 years that I taught, I only produced three more books. So, in other words, before I started teaching, my output was twice as great as it was when I was teaching. And I'm hoping that having more time now will help me return back to being more productive as a writer.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the chemical spill that happened in West Virginia a couple weeks ago now, caused by Freedom Enterprises up there. People when they do get informed about disasters like this, they think about the river being polluted and things like that for at least a short time. But I don't think that on the whole, when we think about environmental disasters, we think about things like the psyche and the way that the people are impacted in their everyday lives, not even in not being able to drink the water that comes out of their tap or bathe in it even, but also how it affects just every moment of your life. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it is incredible you don't think about water until you don't have it. It's been a nightmare pretty much. And I think, we are finally, we were in shock at first. It was kind of like being in a war zone, and you really can't do anything except, hunker down in your foxhole, so to speak. I came back from being out of town, and I stopped on the way and brought back a bunch of jugs of water. And this is before the government or anybody had come in to bring us water. We were kind of handing them out on the block here. Got to make this last time. We don't know how long. And of course, incredible. Four major hospitals shut down, and it's just mind-boggling to think about. We're past that initial crisis stage. We're still. I just actually today picked up another flat of. We're calling it Obama water. you have to keep your sense of humor. They're giving out flats of bottled water on tractor, off of tractor trailer trucks, and they're still coming in here. Some things starting to get back to normal. A lot of people, including myself, we started being able to bathe. The thing seems to have dissipated enough that it doesn't affect people's skin the way it was. But, you know, we still, you know, most people are not drinking it. Most people are not cooking with it. The long-term damage to this community is just incalculable, I think. When you think about all the young people now who are saying, you know, as soon as I graduate, I'm not coming back here. And when you think about all the businesses that will never locate here because of what happened, when you think about all the tourists who won't come and all the conventions who won't come, and when you think about trying to hire somebody to come here to take a job, the damage to this community, and it's so sad because this is such a beautiful little town in so many ways. It's just heartbreaking. And it's not, you know, it's not over. They still don't know what's in our water. This is what's shocking most to me, is that nobody still knows what it is. And now it turns out there's another chemical that was released, and nobody knows what that is. And the company's saying it's proprietary information. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, you think people are going to go to jail over this. Well, I don't think so. I don't think, and the system seems to say, well, that's too bad, and goes on about its business. And I think we also here feel kind of forgotten in terms of, you know, not much attention. And when there is attention, a lot of it's negative. And it's just been very difficult. I feel like I'm rambling on and on, but it's just been, I guess, it's all pent up, all this sadness and rage and so forth. That came with it.
Yeah, there's so many layers to this story. But for me, I think one thing that bothers me is, I think if nearly 500,000 people lost their water supply for this long in New York City, for instance, I mean, there would be outrage. It would be on the cover of every magazine and every newspaper. Mm-hmm. Yet, because it's happening in West Virginia, it seems like the whole country and even the world has been conditioned to think, oh, well, those Appalachian people, you know.
Right. It's, you know, there have been a few, I think, you know, NBC did a fairly good job for a while at covering it. I think MSNBC, I think Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow have discussed it some, but overall it's not been discussed. And it's even, you know, I'm a liberal, but I've had to stop reading the comments, you know, if you read an article on the internet, like from the Washington Post or someplace like that, and read the comments, I've had to stop reading that stuff because, you know, these liberals saying, well, these people, you know, I don't have any sympathy for them at all. They got what they deserve because they keep voting these people in and stuff, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, there seems to be no recognition of the power that the coal industry has over our region. And the power that the coal industry has over the politics. I mean, who are we supposed to vote for? Because there's nobody who will run for office and will have the money to run for office unless they're supported by the coal industry. So the idea that you can somehow fix this with elections is just ludicrous to me. And the fact that the idea that you would have no sympathy for people who are going through this because they're some kind of ignorant hillbilly or something is just outrageous.
Yes, it sure is. Well, you have done so much good work in helping to tear down those images and those misconceptions about Appalachia as a place and Appalachians as a people. And so I know that so many listeners out there would like to thank you for all that good work you've done. I certainly thank you for it. This is Hillbilly Solid. I'm Silas House, and we're talking to acclaimed author Denise Giardina today. Thanks for tuning in here on WUKY Listener Supported Radio. I'm really excited about a book you're doing, which is about your relationship with animals over the years. What stage is that in right now?
Well, I wrote a short version of it this summer, and sent it to my agent, and she said, and she kind of gave me the feedback that I expected, which is that it's okay as far as it goes, but you really need a lot more, especially about of myself, which is hard for me. It's hard for me to write about myself. There was more about the animals, probably. I mean, that I probably covered the animals pretty well, but I need to flesh it out more. And that was going to be my first project when I retired. Every day I say, today's the day I'm going to start back again. I mean, my problem is that with the distraction and everything, my writing time is usually late afternoon, early evening, that kind of thing. And instead of sitting down and writing like I should, I'm looking at Facebook to see what's the latest that people have heard about the chemical spill. And then I'm looking at the internet to see what the latest news report is. And then I'm turning on the news and watching it. And by the time all that happens, then it's getting late, and it's just hard for me to concentrate. And I just need to sit down and block, not turn the TV on, not turn the computer on, and just sit down and get back to the book. What I'm planning to do is, I actually have gone back and fleshed the first three chapters. I have expanded, and I did that before the chemical spill. So I need to now get back to chapter four and just, I've got some notes that I took during the school year when I didn't have time to write, but remembering different times of my life and things like the Vietnam War when I was in college, and some of the early activist stuff I did in terms of land ownership in Appalachia and things like that. And so I need to bring all that kind of stuff into the story. And what I'm trying to do is use the animals as kind of the connecting thread, but to use them to tie in some of this other stuff too. So it's writing nonfiction is not as much fun for me as fiction, but I feel like at my age, I'm 62 years old, and I have some of these memories that I should probably get down on paper while I can. And I'm researching a new novel, but I'm not ready to write it yet. So I think this is a good project for me to be doing in the meantime.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it, and I know lots of other people can't too. We have a lot of animal lovers out there listening to us right now, so they'll be anxious for that.
It's going to be a sad book in some ways, because each chapter is about a different animal, and the animal dies.
Right.
it seems like that repeats itself like 15 times, which is not fun maybe, but that's life, and part of it is actually. It's been interesting for me to note as I write our changing attitude toward animals, which I think is true in the Appalachian region, but also nationally. And my parents' generation, animals did not come in the house. And when I was a kid, that was my mom's. Animals they were not in the change between that attitude and then bringing them into the house and then making them part of your family and taking to the vet and things. That's all new stuff. Cats never came in the house because they had no place to go to the restroom. Then somebody invented kitty litter, and all of a sudden, changed the... I mean, I'm thinking, cats everywhere should... Probably the patron saint of... And I can't remember the man's name. It's in the book, I've forgotten it. But he invented kitty litter. And they probably say a prayer every night. Thank you, Mr. Webb.
They owe him a great debt for the warmth right now. I know that you recently read a book that I loved about Gerard Manley Hopkins. Called Exiles by Ron Hanson.
Yeah, that was a couple of books ago, and that was an excellent. That's an excellent book. Very moving about. Some German nuns who die in a shipwreck, and it kind of flashes back and forth between them and Hopkins. And he wrote one of his great poems about them, it's a very moving book.
Yes, yeah, I encourage everyone to read it that's interested in religiosity and spirituality and belief and doubt and all those things. Poetry, yeah. Well, again, I can't thank you for all the good work that you've done for our region, for our country, and I thank you for joining us on Hillbilly Solid. We are all sending our good energy and everything over the hills and hollers to you in West Virginia, and hoping that there'll be some justice there someday soon.
Yeah, hope so.
We will see you in Lexington on February 13th when you appear at Church of the Good Shepherd, and we'll all be there.
Great.
We're going to leave you with a lovely new song by Caroline Herring. Thanks for joining us here on Hillbilly Solid. I'll talk to you soon, and in the meantime, be good to one another.
I will go into the day and see the beauty come what may. Hello again, hello my friend, hello lovely day. Oh lovely day, you shade me with clouds that hide the sun, and the wind blows when the day is done. I will sing and I will play and gather up a spring bouquet, and autumn's leaves will guide my way on this lovely day. Oh lovely day, you shade me with clouds that hide the sun, and the wind blows when the day. Frogs and katydids will sing lullabies as we rest our heads, dream of this lovely day. Oh, lovely day, you shade me with clouds that hide the sun, and the wind blows when the day.
If I can't bring you to my house, I'll bring my house to you. Washington and Idaho and Oregon, and away we go to Tennessee and Arkansas. No, we won't stop till we've seen them all, till we've seen them all. So what else could you ask for? You don't even need a passport to see the whole world from our living room. So come on, hitch your wagon to the happiness I'm dragging. If I can't bring it to my house, I'll bring my house to you. If I can't bring it to my house, I'll bring my house to you. It don't matter where we go, I'll never be alone. Anywhere beside you is a place that I'll call home. It don't matter where we go, I'll never be alone. Anywhere beside you is a place that I'll call home.